Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, February 14th, 2017. Happy Valentine's Day. We'll begin with our first headline. The first headline reads, University of Illinois, U of I Ethics Chief, Kennedy Email Legal As Is. Not so for any who donate or forward it. This article is written by Tom Kachik and is based out of Springfield. Democratic gubernatorial candidate Chris Kennedy did not violate state ethics laws by sending an email last week to University of Illinois employees on their U of I accounts. But if U of I employees make a campaign contribution from the letter or forward it to other people, they could be found in violation of the State Ethics Act, said Donna S. McNeely, the university's executive director of ethics and compliance. Kennedy, a Kenilworth Democrat, who formerly headed the U of I Board of Trustees, sent an email to some university accounts last week when he announced his 2018 campaign for governor of Illinois. I love this state, and I'm running for governor because we can do better. Together, we can restore the American dream in Illinois in a single generation, Kennedy said in the 7-paragraph emailed message, which also included a button to make contributions. We have a tough task ahead, taking on a governor who has put Illinois in the worst shape it's been since I moved here 30 years ago. I feel called to serve at this moment because I know we can do better, said Kennedy, who made no reference in the message to his tenure on the U of I board from 2009 to 2015. McNeely said Monday that state ethics laws no longer apply to Kennedy. Since Mr. Kennedy is not a state employee, our law does not actually apply to him, but it applies to our employees, she said. So they need to be very careful and not forward or apply or make a donation or such from that message that comes into their email accounts. It's up to the state employee to make sure the state employee does not become involved in any kind of prohibited political activity. A small number, quote-unquote, of university employees contacted the Springfield-based ethics office about the propriety of Kennedy's letter, she said. We responded pretty quickly, she said. The response from Tracy L. Rolf, R-O-L-F, the U of I's Associate Director of University Ethics, said that employee email addresses are considered publicly available information, and as such, we cannot necessarily restrict the content of communications coming into those accounts. Since Mr. Kennedy does not have an appointment with our Board of Trustees any longer and does not hold university employment, to our knowledge, his communication itself is not a violation of the law. However, our action as university employees, once the email is received, is what would be subject to the Prohibited Political Activities section of the Illinois State Officials and Employees Ethics Act. Employees are permitted to unsubscribe, indicating our desire to be removed from the mailing list, but cannot and should not forward the communication in any manner aside to notify our office that would promote this political campaign, Rolf wrote. If Mr. Kennedy communicates with you via private email account and no university resources such as computers, networks, etc. are used in responding to or further communicating those messages to other non-university email accounts, this would be permissible and would not be considered a violation of the prohibited political activity provisions. University employees aren't permitted to engage in political activities on university time, but they may do so outside of work hours. They are permissible if you are outside of that time or are using vacation, personal, or compensatory time off and are not using university property or resources such as, but not limited to, telephones, vehicles, tools, copiers, fax machines, email accounts, and computers, say the university's ethics guidelines. The next headline reads, Homer Firefighter, His Final Call. Funeral for 31-year veteran of Homer Township District draws area crews. This article is written by Noel McGee, that's M-C-G-E-E, out of Homer. About 11:45 a.m. Monday, an emergency alert tone for the Homer Township Fire Protection District came over the radio. This is the final call for firefighter Mike Cummins, that's C-U-M-M-I-N-S, who dedicated 31 years to the fire service, said a dispatcher from Metcad, her voice reverberating from the radios of firefighters standing at attention outside the Homer New Life Church of Faith. The Homer fire chief and department members thank him for his service to the community, the dispatcher continued. We'll never forget his honor, courage, and duty. May he rest in peace. Dozens of fire, police, and emergency medical personnel from Champaign, Vermilion, and Piatt counties gathered at the church to say goodbye, and pay their respects to Mr. Cummins, who was remembered as a loving husband, father, and grandfather, an avid fisherman, and a dedicated volunteer firefighter for Homer and other communities. The 46-year-old Homer man was on his way home from a medical call when he suffered his own medical problem and died early Wednesday morning. He was 46. Dressed in uniform, firefighters filed into the sanctuary and took their seats across the aisle from Mr. Cummins' wife, Cindy, and friends and relatives. Mr. Cummins' black helmet bearing number 17 and his turnout gear sat at the front of the room. There's no way to express the gratitude to the people in this town and others who have reached out and expressed their condolences, said Joe Cummins, Mr. Cummins' older cousin. Last night, 164 firefighters saluted him at his casket. That's huge, he said, his voice choked with emotion. Pastor Dave Ashby, that's A-S-H-B-Y, the chaplain for the Champaign and Urbana Firefighters and senior pastor of Trinity Community Fellowship in Farmer City, officiated the service with Pastor C.W. Greer, G-R-E-E-R, of the Homer Church. Ashby confessed that he never had the privilege of meeting Mr. Cummins, but after talking with his loved ones over the weekend, he said it became apparent that a few words could best describe him: fisherman, family man, and firefighter. He only lived 46 years, Ashby said, sharing the words of one relative, but he got more out of life than anyone else, and fishing was his life. Ashby said Mr. Cummins' children were technically his stepchildren, but Mike looked at y'all as his kids. He loved you like you were his, and he treated you like you were his. And Cindy was the love of his life, Ashby said. On their last night together, the minister said Mr. Cummins bounced up and down in their bed, then repeated to his wife, "Hello, beautiful." Then a tone from his radio sounded late at night. Mike jumped up at the tone, Ashby said. Before he left, he said to his wife one last time, "Hello, beautiful. I love you." Late Tuesday night, an Allerton woman drove her SUV off the side of a country road south of the village, hit an embankment, and overturned. Mr. Cummins went to the call even though he wasn't feeling well. He was doing his job, he was following through because he was committed, Ashby said, adding, Mr. Cummins became a volunteer firefighter at 18 and got involved in the Homer Department about 2.5 years ago on the day he met Chief Don Happ, that's H-A-P-P. Ashby joked that as soon as Mr. Cummins learned that Happ was involved in the local fire department, that's all the two men talked about. He was all about the fire service, the minister said. If he needed anything, Mike would get it done, he said, recalling Happ's words. He'd take care of it. He said Mr. Cummins never missed a training and rarely missed a call. He was the last one to leave on a department workday, and he loved to volunteer. He loved driving the tanker in the parade, Ashby said. The woman in the accident wasn't seriously injured, but back in town, Mr. Cummins passed out behind the wheel of his truck and hit a parked car, pushing it into an SUV and the SUV into another parked car. His truck also hit a concrete flower pot at the southeast corner of the intersection of Main and First Streets before coming to a stop. Mr. Cummins was taken to Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana, where he died at 1:52 a.m. on Wednesday. On Monday, a large American flag hung from ladder trucks from the Savoy and Tuscola fire departments in that same intersection. At the end of the service, two bagpipers played Amazing Grace and Then Going Home, as fellow firefighters placed Mr. Cummins' casket in the back of the Homer Fire and Rescue truck, draped with black cloth. After his last call, a funeral procession made its way from the church, through town, down Main Street, and under the large flag. There, more firefighters stood at attention and saluted Mr. Cummins' casket as it drove by. A number of residents also stood at both sides of the road. "I didn't know him, but I wanted to pay my respects and show support to our fire department," said Carol Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, who was holding an American flag. "We're a tight-knit community, and we come together to support each other," Bonnie Miller, wife of Homer's assistant fire chief Bob Miller, said as she watched the fire and rescue truck pause in front of the Homer Fire Station before heading on to Old Homer Cemetery, Mr. Cummins' final resting place. Firefighters put one last message for their fallen brother on their sign out front. R.I.P. Firefighter Mike Cummins. We got it from here. The next headline reads, Champaign Schools. Work on Central could be year away. Draft schedule staggers projects. This article is written by Nicole LaFond and is based out of Champaign. Construction on Central High School could begin as soon as March 2018. On Monday evening, the school board reviewed a draft schedule for the 8 projects that will be funded through Unit 4's $183.4 million referendum that passed in November. The projects will be staggered and separated into different phases: programming, design, a design and construction overlap phase, and a construction phase. Some staggering of projects will need to occur essentially to allow for the most competitive bidding environment as we try to maximize the length to which district dollars will go, Chief Financial and Legal Officer, Tom Lockman said. Building the athletic facilities at Spalding Park will begin first, with collaboration on the design of the fields between the school district and the Champaign Park District starting this May. Construction will begin next spring, and the facilities will be complete by fall of 2018. Central will be in a design and construction overlap phase from March 2018 to March 2019. This is largely due to the fact that there will be a considerable amount of site development that has to take place at the high school to prepare for the expansions, including the removal of several buildings surrounding the school, Lockman said. The $87.1 million renovation and expansion at Central is estimated to be complete by September 2022, according to the draft schedule. Design planning for the new Dr. Howard Elementary School will begin this spring, with construction set to begin in fall of 2018. That $16.1 million project, which will include the demolition of the current elementary school, is set to be complete by April 2020. Design for the $63.3 million renovation of Centennial High School will start this summer, too, around the same time as Central. Construction will start after the first of the year in 2019. The school will be finished about the same time as Central in 2022. McKinley Fields redevelopment will be complete by fall 2019, with design set to begin next May. Construction at Southside Elementary School will come next, with the $11.1 million upgrade and addition set to start in the summer of 2019 and finish by September 2021. There will be an 8-month break in building between September 2020 and April 2021. Design for Edison Middle School's $15 million renovation will start in the spring of 2018, with construction beginning in the fall of 2019. There will be a 5-month construction break from December 2020 to May 2021, and the project will be complete by October 2021. The $6 million renovation of the International Prep Academy will begin construction in May of 2021, with plans to finish updates by the end of December that year. A follow-up to this article: announcement of new Unit 4 superintendent due Wednesday. This article is also written by Nicole LaFond and is based out of Champaign. Unit 4 school board members will announce Superintendent Judy Wigand's replacement at 6 p.m. on Wednesday. The board called a special meeting for the announcement, which will be similar to a news conference. Board members will not formally approve the hire until its next meeting on February 27, similar to when the University of Illinois announces whom it has hired, but the decision is contingent on trustees' approval, Board President Chris Klopel said. Board members tentatively decided on the candidate to replace the retiring Wigand during an executive session 21 days ago and have spent the past 3 weeks negotiating a contract with the next district leader. The three finalists are Susan Zola, Unit 4's Assistant Superintendent for Achievement, Curriculum, and Instruction; Paul Fregau, I apologize for name mispronunciation, his last name is spelled F-R-E-G-E-A-U, an assistant superintendent in the North Kansas City, Missouri School District; and Michael Popp, interim superintendent of Flossmoor Schools and an adjunct professor at Aurora University. Earlier, the board agreed the new hire would receive a total compensation package of between $205,000 and $235,000. The next headline reads, Champaign County Nursing Home, consultant, reorganize as nonprofit. This article is written by Tom Kachik and is based out of Urbana. Contending that the current operational model, is not working, a consultant recommends that the Champaign County Nursing Home be reorganized as a new nonprofit corporation with sponsorship by other local health care businesses. Ron Aldrich, that's A-L-D-R-I-C-H, a healthcare consultant in New Mexico, recommended the strategy Monday night to the volunteer board of directors that oversees the nursing home's operations. He said he envisioned a joint venture between Carle Foundation Hospital and Carle Clinic, Health Alliance, Presence Covenant Medical Center, Christie Clinic, and the county government. The new sponsoring entity would require some level of incremental investment by all the sponsors so that they had skin in the game, said Aldrich, who more than 30 years ago was the CEO at Mercy Hospital in Urbana now known as Presence Covenant. Aldritz also recommended that Presence Life Connections, a subsidiary of Presence Health, which operates 11 Catholic hospitals in Illinois, including Presence Covenant and United Samaritans in Danville, become the long-term contractual manager of the nursing home. The nursing home is now managed by Management Performance Associates of Suburban St. Louis. Its contract with the county ends on June 30th. Affiliating with Presence, Aldritz said, would gain the benefit of system membership where certain services are shared and colleagues share information about innovative programs and services. In the short term, he said, that the nursing home does not have sufficient working capital to stay current with payables without changes at either the county or state levels. Potential changes to federal health care policy adds to the uncertainty, he said. He said that a proposed property tax increase for the nursing home, which is on the April 4th ballot, would provide stability for 6 to 7 years. But the county still needs to confront a delay in state Medicaid reimbursements to the nursing home and may have to pursue a lawsuit, he said. Aldritz said the sale of the nursing home to a private firm, a suggestion embraced by some Republicans on the county board, may not be a successful strategy for a variety of economic and political issues. Given uncertainties regarding state finances and the Federal Affordable Care Act, potential purchasers may be unwilling to pursue acquisition of large nursing home facilities and land at this point in time, he said. Also, many nursing home operators are not pro-union, he said, and may be unwilling to purchase a nursing home facility with a long union history and a current contract which would continue. Further, the defeat of the property tax proposal on the April 4th ballot may cause the nursing home to be less valuable to a potential buyer because it could be perceived as a lack of support, given all the newspaper and other press coverage which would likely continue, Aldritz said. He also said he would be concerned about needy and at-risk populations in the county if all long-term providers were for profit. Aldritz suggested development of a foundation to access private sources of philanthropy, an idea which the nursing home board has discussed for years but never acted upon. And he said the home needs a new food service provider. My brief experience in dealing with a nursing home vendor suggests that a change is in order, he said. It should be noted that complaints about food service are not uncommon in the healthcare industry. However, this issue is generating far too much noise. Aldritz was paid $8,000 for the report, said County Administrator Rick Snyder, S-N-I-D-E-R, $6,500 for his time and $1,500 in travel expenses. And a follow-up to this. Board's response, proposal is worth following up on. Members of the Champaign County Nursing Homes Board of Directors generally reacted favorably Monday night to a consultant's report that recommended partnerships with local healthcare businesses to help operate the county-owned home. That sounds like an exciting approach to me, said board member Sam Banks, who called it something worth pursuing, quote-unquote. Board Chairman Jack Anderson agreed and said he would forward the plan to the state's attorney's office to see whether the proposal would be within the law. We're not the only ones who have an interest in this, he said. There are other places in our community we should be joining with to ensure the success of this. County Administrator Rick Snyder, again that's S-N-I-D-E-R, acknowledged that consultant Ron Aldrich's recommendation for a joint business-government venture may not be possible on the face of it, but there may be some creative alternatives to get to the same net result. We'll have to do some research to figure that out. The board took no vote but reached a consensus to ask the state's attorney's office to review the feasibility of the plan. The other news at Monday night's meeting was mostly gloomy. Snyder said the state rejected the nursing home's request for a $1 million cash advance to help make up for delayed Medicaid payments. He said the county hoped to renew the effort, asking for a $400,000 advance instead. Also on Monday, board members heard that the nursing home's overall rating by the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services dropped January 1st from the 2 stars to 1 on a 4-star scale. That its average daily consensus dropped, from 177 in December to 167 in January, and that its accounts receivable, the money it owes vendors, increased from $5.34 million in November to $5.42 million in December. And now let's take a quick look at our weather forecast for the next few days. And this forecast is provided by Greg Soulge, S-O-U-L-J-E. from his small column called On the Weather Front. So today, the high will be 50 degrees, sunny, westerly wind 10 to 18 miles per hour and gusty. Overnight, a few clouds, northwest wind 8 to 16 miles per hour and gusty. Wednesday, the high will be 37, the low will be 25. Mostly sunny, overnight fair. Thursday, the high will be 46, the low will be 24. It will be partly cloudy. Friday, the high will be 58, the low will be 31 degrees. It will be mostly sunny and breezy. And Saturday, we'll hit a high of 60 and we'll have a low of 39 degrees. It will be partly cloudy and breezy. And now, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of editor Jim Rosso. That's R-O-S-S-O-W. Our high school confidential correspondent from Blue Ridge, Kyle Mowbray, M-O-U-B-R-I-E, graduated in December and is taking classes at Parkland College. Fortunately, Blue Ridge principal John Lawrence was quick to locate a pinch hitter, Caitlin Stevens. The 17-year-old Stevens is a perfect fit. Asked what she'd like to be doing in 10 years, the junior said, hopefully teaching English somewhere or writing a book. To learn more about Stevens, that's S-T-E-P-H-E-N-S, and the 34 others who are writing for us weekly, visit newsgazette.com and search for high school correspondence, quote unquote. So let's take a quick look at our online audience. What was trending last week at newsgazette.com, which in a 7-day period ending Sunday saw 1,446,530 page views? The three top stories were, 1, Urbana man charged with living, voting in U.S. illegally, 2, I-57 road rage incident leads to arrest, and 3, fallen Homer firefighter never missed a call. Top sports stories, the top three were, 1, Tate, Gross's ouster, not a simple task, 2, Whitman mum on Illini basketball, 3, recruiting coordinator out. And the top videos, 1, Richie, R-I-C-H-E-Y, not a streak you want to see continue, 2, News Gazette top 10 boys basketball week 11, and 3, Illini recap, this league you've got to play for 40. Top photo galleries, 1, On the Town, February 5th, 2017, National Philanthropy Day Luncheon, 2, High School Boys Basketball, Rantoul versus St. Joseph, 3, High School Girls Basketball, 2A Regional Championship, Unity versus Monticello. And now our history, area history, in 1917. State Senator John T. Denver, that's D-E-N-V-I-R, of Chicago, proposed making Cook County a separate state. Under his plan, Chicago would be known as the state of Northern Illinois. The rest of the state would be known as the state of Southern Illinois. In 1967, a large park was expected to open in Champaign in 1969 on a 23.8-acre tract donated by the family of the late pioneer banker Ross R. Mattis, M-A-T-T-I-S. According to Arnold Greenman, Park District General Manager, development of the park, to be named for Mr. Mattis, would include a 5-acre lake, a wooded area, sports and athletic facilities, and day camping. The land was part of a farm bought by Mr. Mattis in 1885. He came to Champaign in 1865 and at age 25 became president of the banking firm of Burnham, Trevitt, and Mattis, which became the Bank of Illinois. He died in 1945 at the age of 96. In 2002, so far that winter, Champaign-Urbana had had 2.5 inches of snow, said Jim Angel of the Illinois State Water Survey. The least snow for winter was 6.7 inches in 1953 to 54, he said. And in international history, today's highlights. On February 14, 1967, Aretha Franklin recorded her cover of Otis Redding's Respect at Atlantic Records in New York. The Turtles' single Happy Together was released on the White Whale label. And on this date in 1912, Arizona became the 48th state of the Union, as President William Howard Taft signed a proclamation. And now, Marcus Jackson's weekly Q&A with a mover and shaker, MJ's Minute with Preston Williams, Jr. Nearly 4 years after his retirement as superintendent of the Urbana School District, Preston Williams, Jr. is still involved with education, whether it's helping wife Ivy with the PTA program in the district or spending time with kindergarten and first graders at Williams Elementary, the school that was renamed for him in 2015. Williams stopped by the News Gazette to chat with our Marcus Jackson about retirement, having a school named for him, and his playing days in the Chicago White Sox organization. To view their full conversation, check out the video at newsgazette.com. What made you get involved in education? Growing up, teachers were very influential in my life and in the community. I grew up on the north side of Kankakee, and we didn't have a lot of businessmen or attorneys or doctors. My mom worked at Kankakee State Hospital, and Dad worked in a factory. I knew I didn't want to work in a factory. The people in the church and in the schools and the community who were influential were teachers. For me, being an educator when I was younger was important, and I saw it as a way later to help and influence and change the dynamics of our classroom, of our building, of our district, of our community, much later. At the renaming of the school, my first grade teacher, Mrs. White, came. She was probably my first love, other than the love you have for your mother. I always respected her, even when she had me hold those encyclopedias up because I was running my mouth. Her husband and guys like Mr. Stewart, African-American folks who were influential, very articulate, and they were doing good things in the community. For me, I wanted to be able to do that, and I could see it. If you'd like to join Marcus Jackson for a chat in our downtown offices, drop him a note on Twitter. His handle is Marcus, MarcusJ, _NG, or send him an email at mjackson@newsgazette.com. And now, I met my soulmate at Illinois. With the University of Illinois about to turn the big 150, we asked A-list alumni about the one campus town spot that made the biggest impression on them. On Tuesdays throughout 2017, managing editor Jeff D'Alessio will tell their tales. Unless you're a Buckeye or a Badger, there hasn't been a lot to love at Memorial Stadium lately. But once upon a time, it was a place where magic happened, and we don't just mean on the field. Long before she'd go on to become executive VP of Cisco Systems and sit on the boards at Georgetown University and Stanford Hospital, it's where Sue Bostrom, B-O-S-T-R-O-M, who received a Bachelor's of Science in 82, first laid eyes on the man she'd marry. Kirk Bostrom, the starting punter for Mike White's 1980 Illini, was doing his thing. "I was working on my Illiniette drills," Sue says. "We didn't actually go on a date until the spring of 1982, but the chemistry worked immediately. We were engaged 3 months later and married within a year. 33 years and 3 children later, I feel blessed that I met my soulmate at Illinois." Jared G., that's J-A-R-R-O-D, last name G, G-E-E, who received a Bachelor of Arts in 98, is spending this Valentine's Day with fiancé Kelly, K-E-L-L-I, Slater, S-L-A-T-E-R. They also met at the stadium, week 2, as G best remembers, in the late 90s. He can't recall the Illini opponent on that warm September Saturday, but the game was never in doubt, so G and fellow Lon Kruger-era starter Kevin Turner decided to leave early for a party they'd heard about at Illinois State. G, a 3-year first-string forward for Kruger and Lou Henson, takes it from here. "While walking out of the stadium, we ran across 2 girls. Kevin took a liking to one and approached her. Me, I've always been kind of shy, so while Kevin and the other young lady conversed, me and my future fiancé stood there looking at the sky. I finally got the heart and courage to say something to her, and we started a friendship that would last until 2013, when it turned into something very special and something that I hope to continue for the rest of my life." Jeff Anderson's love connection happened in Lincoln Hall. During a dreaded 8 a.m. lecture, no less, recalls the Game Show Network's general manager, who received a Bachelor of Arts in 89. He was a sophomore. She was Mrs. Wright. As fate would have it, a cute blonde co-ed would come late to class every day and sit in the front row of the hall, he says. 3 years later, we were married and started a life together that spanned 25 years. She passed away last year from ALS, but the University of Illinois was always a source of pride and joy for the both of us. And the Lincoln Hall Theater is where then-aspiring actor and now Brown University professor emeritus Don Wilmeth, W-I-L-M-E-T-H, who received his Ph.D. in 64, gave the performance of his life as J.B. in Archibald MacLeish's modern retelling of the story of the biblical Job. Cast alongside an actress old enough to be his mother, Wilmeth required some time in the makeup room to pull off the part. That's where he met Judy, then a freshman makeup assistant. "Thanks to the gray in my hair, she thought I was much more mature than I actually was," says Wilmeth, a 2015 U of I Alumni Achievement Award winner. "Fortunately, she was fooled, or led me to believe she was, for we began to date, and less than a year later, we were married. Now, more than 50 years later, I still tread the boards from time to time, but now must cover my gray hair to appear younger." I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part 1 of the News Gazette, dated for this date Tuesday, February 14th, 2017. We'll continue with part 2 shortly. Thank you very much for listening, and have a wonderful day.